This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Code 42 and I'm speaking with John Durant.
Hi, glad to be with you today. I am the Chief Technology Officer and SVP of Operations here at Code 42, and our focus is securing endpoints, which sounds like a fairly generic term, but we secure endpoints. We have a consumer, small business, and enterprise side. A lot of our energy tends to focus on the enterprise, and next would be the small business. It's a big challenge for enterprises to know what is happening on endpoints. And by endpoints, I mean things like laptops, desktops, those kinds of things. And to know the file activity that's happening there. Can you know who had which files? When did they have them? What did they do with them? Those are questions that you really can only answer if you actually have the files themselves. And so our business began really in a disaster recovery backup restore scenario. And then over the past 2.5 years, we've been moving it more and more toward the user behavior analytics, predictive analytics side of things.
That's interesting because that's very different to a lot of your competitors in the space. They've started out as security and maybe drifted into file protection, backup, restore and archiving almost as a secondary thought because it's all about protecting the data. One of the challenges at the endpoint is patching, as we've seen in the last few days with the global attack that's gone on. How do you see companies understanding the challenge between an emergency patch comes out, which they need to get out quickly, and their traditional patching process, which they have for very good reasons, because they want to make sure it's not going to impact or shut machines down? How are you seeing customers dealing with the conflict between the two?
It's a big challenge, and we're starting to see the tension pulling and gaps are opening up there. I start with simple concepts. Each of us as human beings tend to like certain patterns. We drive to work, we park in the same parking spot. At home, we tend to put our socks in the same drawer because we don't like having to look all over the house for a pair of socks. We just want to know that they're in this one drawer. Now, that might sound like a sort of silly way to get into this topic, but that pattern then plays out in all kinds of very sophisticated things we do in an enterprise, for example. We want a repeatable process. If you only have 100 machines, that you can get your head around a quick patch process because you literally could go sneakernet and have someone go around and patch these computers. But as that scale grows, once you get past 300-400, the level of complexity gets much higher, and there are these jump points, and then you get into thousands. We have customers that will have 195,000 endpoints that they're worried about. The simple laws of thermodynamics of time, just the simple clock of how do you update all of those? Well, we have magic wands in the world that are supposed to make this super easy, and I understand, and I'm not suggesting that they don't make it much, much easier, but clearly when you have incidents happening like this the other day where they can't wait until Patch Tuesday, mm-hmm. Patch Tuesday exists for a reason in the Windows environment. It has been a great benefit and power for a lot of these enterprises, but just leaning on Patch Tuesday isn't enough. And so what we're seeing organizations face now is how do they essentially do quick fix engineering and get that across a variety of hardware? Because it's Windows machines, it's Mac, it's Linux. How do we deploy the patches across all these machines? Because some of these attacks are not just for one specific OS. They're spanning OSs now. And so we're seeing that tension start to appear, and not all of the answers are complete on how they're going to manage that. Then we see ransomware and things like that hitting and causing lots of damage. So I think over the next 18 to 24 months, it'll be very interesting to see, because opportunity's knocking, who's going to jump in that breach and make it much easier for people to do just-in-time patch deployments that they can do with the easiest management possible.
It's an interesting challenge, isn't it? If we look at the rise of the mobile, every time we turn our phone on, every time we look at our tablet, there's another application that needs patching. We don't think about it. We just say, oh yeah, update that application. When we come to our desktops and our laptops, because we tend to see them much more as enterprise-connected devices, we leave it to somebody else to do that job. Microsoft has tried to change that. It's tried to have automatic patches pushed direct to the endpoints. But from an enterprise perspective, there are processes they need to go through. Are we ever truly going to get to the point where a vendor comes along, issues a patch, and enterprises will allow that to flow all the way through? Or is this one of those situations where it's easy to say on paper? It's great for commentators to say on television, but the truth of the reality on the ground is that we can't have that uncontrolled flow.
That's a really cool question. I think that the industry is going to force us into that kind of equation where those kinds of updates can just happen. One of the reasons why I have here my iPhone 7 Plus, which I love, one of the reasons why, to me, updating my apps on there, I see the little icon show up, I have 12 updates. I don't even think about it, because it doesn't disrupt any of the things that I'm doing. Yes, I use Outlook on iOS, which I think is interesting of a sign of the times, that you've got me using Microsoft Outlook connected to my Gmail account for my work account. We use Google, and so using that on Outlook on my iOS, what a world that we're living in. But that disruption was maybe 20 seconds. Well, it downloaded, updated, rolled out my new version of Outlook, and I'm back in business on iOS. People don't have that perception or that experience for their computers that they use all the time. They know that updates, it's going to be disruptive. It's time to go to lunch. I'll start these updates. And that cannot continue. And it is easy to say that, but we have to get to this point where there is a controlled space that will allow updates, that there is a walled garden within that OS that will allow people to do those updates. They're trivial, they go quickly, and people's work lives are not disrupted. We have to get to that point. It's not a question of if or should we. We must get to that point. The challenge is out there, and the OS that ultimately will win over the next several years, whose dominance will either be assured one way or another, will be the one that really, I think, solves that problem.
If we look at the devices around the enterprise, of course, they're not owned by the enterprise anymore in so many companies. There is no big budget to go and replace laptops or desktops. There's no budget to provide people with mobile phones. Instead, businesses have dumped a whole pile of cost that was on their CapEx by allowing people to bring their technology into the office. With that comes a massive security challenge. When we deploy endpoint software, we still tend to think of this as being the business devices, or those devices that we think are attached to our business networks. The reality is it's any device the user brings in, from their MP3 player where they plug it in to sync to their phone, to their tablet, to their latest toy that they brought in to show off to other workers in the office. Look, hey, look, I've just got this, it connects to the internet. How do we reevaluate what is an endpoint, and how do we begin to assess what we should be protecting?
It's another really cool question. By the way, I'm pointing over here. I've got my Amazon Echo device with Alexa sitting over here. And so we're seeing this happen. A lot of the divisions that we have, they're a bit fictitious. They're virtual in our mind about what's our company's asset, what's not our company's asset. I do a good chunk of my job on this iPhone that I purchased with my own money, with apps. Some of the apps I purchased myself, or that I got myself, Outlook on this iOS, that was not deployed by my company. The division between that and now switching over here to my Microsoft Surface Book and doing what I'm doing there, those divisions are, I think, they're breaking down. By the way, I do hasten to mention this because it's so interesting. I looked at what Microsoft is doing with its Continuum, and I think that's a hint of where things ultimately will go. I'm not avoiding your question. I'm actually going to answer it because I do remember what specifically you asked, but I'm sharing this for a reason. And that is, I can conceive in my mind a scenario where the devices are incidental to this process. Imagine having something in your possession that is the combination of your work life, your personal life, and that is simply a logical construct that is irrelevant of the actual hardware involved or the barriers. It doesn't matter whether you're behind a firewall. I can conceive a world where those kind of distinctions go away, because right now I'm doing work on my iOS device that is not behind a firewall. It's just on the network. All the protection is up at the software layer. And I like the idea that I could have a generic screen with a generic keyboard. I come into work, it senses that I'm at work, it senses that I'm here now, and this CPU that I'm lugging around suddenly projects onto here, not my home life and the fact that I use a certain bank and those kinds of things, but it projects my work life. But as I leave work, go home, it senses that I'm now at home and that work life fades, but I'm actually carrying the same CPU with the same memory and those same things. My point in answering your question then is this. Okay, that's going way far ahead. We will always be quite behind in that evaluation process because the hardware is developing so fast, but even more than the hardware, now the logical layer is moving at such a pace that we're always going to be years behind in evaluating those really thorny questions.
I think there are two things that come out of that, though. The first is, if you're running an application that your company doesn't know about because you bought it or you downloaded it, but you're using it for company business, how can they possibly be responsible for patching and maintaining that? So there comes the issue of personal responsibility. Where do you see this issue of personal responsibility when you talk to your clients? Do you see them assuming that end users are going to take ownership of what they download, what they use on their device? Or is there, the moment people say, I'm also using it for work, an abdication of responsibility, assuming that the company will deal with it?
There's a really insightful way of thinking about it, and this idea of acceptance and abdication and surrender. I think some of it comes down to, and this might sound a little bit high level, but some of this comes down to literacy. A literacy of what I'm engaged in. I think it's really interesting how complex our work experiences are, or even our consumer experiences are with these devices, and the level of training and understanding is effectively zero. And I have my father who has an Android phone, and he has come up to speed. He was an auto mechanic. My father grew up working on cars from the age of 14 and fixing cars, which is a big American and certainly a passion in the UK. And he has adapted to using an Android phone. His understanding, though, of the security implications of what he's doing and the rest of it is less than zero. Perhaps part of the answer in this is increasing the literacy of people and not assuming that they understand the implications of the decisions they're making and drawing clearer decision points for them to signal their intentions with these. That is in the offering, but that's an industry trend that has not taken off in terms of increasing that literacy. We constantly keep signing people up for things and assuming they get what they're doing.
But do you see companies going out there with their staff education programs and saying to people, look, we don't mind you bringing these devices in. We know you're going to do it even if we say don't. We accept there are applications you're going to want to use that we don't use as a company. Some of them we'll ask you not to use with company data. Some of them have benefits to being used. All we ask is that actually you, as part of your employment contract, take the responsibility for the things that you bring in that you are going to use here.
That's certainly possible. One of the things that's implied in what you described is that companies will have a better sense for where the risks really are. This is an area where we've been investing at Code 42, and so it's one that I know I pay a lot of attention to, which is in the security realm, we treat every employee in the company with the same level of suspicion. They all are treated with the same lack of trust, if you will. In order to protect them from themselves and protect the company, we build walls. And when those walls aren't enough, we put concertina wire above them. And when that's not enough, we electrify a fence around it. And when that's not enough, we build a moat. And when that's not enough, we build even higher walls and deeper moats and fences around fences. The answer cannot be there. And we're still leaning so hard on that in the industry. Where things are going, and it's certainly, like I say, what has been guiding our product development, is can you get better at understanding who are the people you really need to focus on? They might not be malicious, they might be well-intentioned people, but because their literacy and other things are so low, they're creating undue risks. They're installing software that you don't allow. And again, I talk to security people all the time. I love to ask this question. I'll say, what cloud-based file sharing system is running in your organization? And they'll often say, Microsoft OneDrive for Business, or Dropbox, Box, Google Drive. And I say, you all answered a question I did not ask you. I did not ask you which one you've authorized. I asked you which one is running in your business. And then usually both hands go up and they'll go, ah, everyone under the sun. And I say, very good. Do you care? This is a legitimate question InfoSec people are facing, and some of them maybe don't want to ask the question, but do you care if a marketing person decides to use their own Hotmail drive, OneDrive, personal OneDrive account, to share a marketing slide deck that they're working on for a conference 2 weeks from now, and they're using their own OneDrive account to share that file with somebody because the VPN wasn't working and blah, blah, blah? Do we care about that? Do we care about that on the same level as we do about somebody having access to the current financials and sharing that on their personal G Drive account? And right now, we treat both of those scenarios with the same level of concern. What I'm proposing, where I think ultimately security is going, is we actually don't care about that first case. Let it go. So then the question becomes, are there signals that are happening in the telemetry of this ecosystem that can tell you that person X, who's going to go after those financials, is actually likely to go get them? In other words, before they even go grab the files off of FileShare and open up their own Box account, before they even do that, are there tells? are there signals in the telemetry that could indicate they're likely to do that? And then if there are likely, because of file activity, network activity, different types of networks they connect to, all those things, that you then turn up the security for that person and turn it down for the other person.
Now that's interesting, because that takes into cloud brokerage, and we've started to see a number of solutions in this space. The challenge with that is IT not being seen as the blocker. And historically, IT over the last 25 years has been seen as getting in the way of what the end users want. What IT hasn't done is effectively maneuver itself into a position where actually it's seen as enabling the engagement for the user rather than stopping the user doing what they want. Cloud brokerage, as you say, is the opportunity to see they're going to move it to somewhere we don't trust. But part of that also has to be not just turning that security up, but explaining maybe through a message on the screen to the user, we notice you're trying to use Service X. It is not approved for this type of material by the company. Here is what we do approve. If you like, we will help you move documents to here and we'll set you up an account and we'll get you going. Where is that level of sophistication when you talk to companies? Because I don't see it.
I don't really see much of that either. We agree. I'm cynical, in a way, about human nature, because it takes a lifetime to learn to live the one you're in, and we're all around a bunch of people who are all learning to live life for the first time. And every generation does need to relearn every lesson over again. We know this is true. That said, I do think that the vast majority of people like doing the right thing. I think the voice of the people generally is good, and people don't want to step out of line, and they don't want to do things that could jeopardize their employment and things like that. There are the bad actors, but I think they're always a very small minority. So what we don't do in the industry right now a good job of is we don't give people, we don't educate them, we don't increase their literacy, we don't give them other options, and so we block, stop, prevent. They end up going around it. And now the horses are out of the barn while we keep building thicker walls around the barn without even recognizing they aren't even in here anymore. We've built a better barn. They aren't even there. Mm-hmm. This is a huge gap. Like I say, opportunity is knocking.
So one solution to that might be to try and hook to other things we see. And I'm asking you kind of here to look into the future. We know that we don't care about an update on our mobile app, because actually if I update that app, it's not going to destroy all the other apps on my phone. We know that one of the reasons we don't like updating apps on our PCs and our servers is history has told us I update that app and something else breaks. We've got container technology coming along. Do you think we're going to reach the point where, in fact, every app, irrespective of where it's delivered, is delivered in a container? That would allow the vendor to control the security stance and the actions of that app completely. Now, that means Microsoft needs to issue an emergency patch. It can do that worldwide by issuing the change to the master container that flows down to every container running that app worldwide. We don't need to panic inside IT security because we know it's not going to break anything. It's contained. But to the same extent, we can add additional security around the containers as we're seeing in the cloud environment to stop things getting out. We know that when malware finds itself in a virtual machine or containers at the moment, many of those malware attacks will cease. And they'll cease because the attackers know it's not going to be an easy way to get out. How long before we take these technologies and realize that we have an opportunity to fix the problem?
You're exactly right, and that whole container concept is what was implied in some of my previous responses about what we could do, and somebody is going to innovate on the desktop in a way that provides that containerization. My hope is that somebody in Redmond right now got a new version of Windows that they're working on that's doing this. And even for Mac, because I love Mac. I've got this Surface Book, but I want to be clear. I also have my MacBook here. I've got a little tiny 13-inch. That thing is razor thin. It's fantastic. So I've got both. But I'm not sure that in both platforms we're where we need to be in terms of this containerization. And my hope is that people both in the spaceship and back in Redmond, that they're thinking about this very thing, because this is where we need to go. And this is what would provide like that continuum experience I was describing. That's how that would get enabled. Because we even talk about things like it's running in the cloud. That distinction, I think, ultimately will break down. We're still all getting to the cloud, but once we're all there, then I think that distinction will start to break down and the problems will move elsewhere. I'm hopeful.
We can always be hopeful. John, thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're very kind.